One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
I think if you can't get a builder on the phone, he's either too busy or he just doesn't answer his phone the best of times. And you just got to, I always picture myself, like we'd be appointing subcontractors. If I can't get a subcontractor on the phone, I won't use him, because the day when there's a problem is the day you need to get him on the phone.
Welcome to the fourth episode of the Get In Our Home series. This series is designed to help home builders, homeowners and renovators to get inspiration and guidance from industry professionals and also homeowners themselves. My name is Peter Kilmartin, and in this episode, we travel down to County Cork to meet Kieran from KMC Homes. This is our first episode with an industry professional, and we speak about all things home building, right through from the current home building climate, rising material costs, getting planning permission, going the self-build route, to getting Kieran's top tips and building advice. This episode is so, so valuable for those about to start building a home. Don't forget, you can also see Kieran on our Get In Our Home YouTube channel and all of the homes we've already filmed for the series. If you're liking the channel, please, please consider leaving us a review and subscribing. It'll cost you absolutely nothing and really help us to keep going with the content. So let's get into it.
Kieran, thanks very much for doing this. I really appreciate your time. And I suppose the whole idea of the series is to get industry professionals and to get advice from people that know a lot more than your average self-builder or your average Joe Soap going to build a house. So really appreciate your time. So thank you.
I hope I can help.
So tell me a little bit about yourself, what you do, where you're from. We're in Cork at the moment, so I'm sure you're going to give Cork a mention.
So I'm originally from Middleton in County Cork, East Cork. I studied civil engineering in UCC and became a civil engineer, worked with a lot of the big builders, Hegarty's, Sisk's and Murphy's in the UK and what have you. And then went out on my own in 2004 to start house building.
Time to go out on your own.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was kind of the boom was running along, but it wasn't crazy at that stage. So I was doing extensions, renovations, and whatever. And then as time wore on, I started building one-off houses, and then I didn't like. I thought the customer service end was very light, that people who were building a house, they were poorly served because they were caught between the architect and the engineer and the QS and the builder and everything else. So I came up with this idea of design and build, which isn't a new idea in itself, but I mean to make a kind of a bespoke design and build company where you could come to one company and that company would design your house and build your house, fixed price, and give you a nice straightforward and fairly stress-free journey to your dream home at the end of the day. So that's what my company, KMC Homes, became then, and I've been doing it ever since.
So essentially, KMC Homes, I come to you, I've got a site, I say, Kieran, I've got this amount of money for my budget, and you say, right, see you in a year and a half.
Yeah, so you'd come to us with your site and your budget and your wish list. So look, I want a 4-bedroom house. My budget is 350,000 or whatever it is. And, we've seen photographs on Instagram or Facebook, whatever, of images we like. And we bring an architect to the table, QS, all the building team, and we'll design your home around your budget. We're constantly cost checking all your designs to make sure they are on budget. When you've signed off and everything, we lodge for planning permission, and then we build your new home fixed price for this budget. So it's very simple and straightforward from a client's perspective. We've done an awful lot of work behind the scenes to make it all work, but clients get what they really need, which is kind of the one-stop shop and one team that takes full responsibility for delivering their new home,
what do you think of the current building climate, or should I say crisis?
Well, I suppose it's funny because, like, when COVID happened, when the first lockdown happened, everyone thought the property market was going to crash, and people were even lowering their bids for houses, thinking that people would still sell them to them at that level and everything else. And then when the lockdown ended last year, the first lockdown, the property market kind of trundled on, and then it kind of gained a bit of speed, and then it really got going.
It's increased in value, yeah.
And then, of course, we had the lockdown this year. But I suppose one thing that has changed is now that with COVID and everything else, a lot of people are beginning to move out of big cities into smaller cities,
yes,
or from
yes.
smaller cities into smaller towns. So people are moving away from major urban centres. I suppose quality of life, staycations. I know that the summer house market has gone wild. People are just, I suppose, concerned with living in cities with loads of people in proximity and all that kind of thing. Maybe things like air quality and whatever. So the market has is still really buoyant, too buoyant, really. Property prices. Property prices are too strong. Okay. I mean, property prices are going up a huge amount on a monthly basis. And you would expect that, you know, with all the money we've borrowed and everything else, that things would look different, but they don't. So it's a difficult time for home buyers, really, I suppose, really, you know.
And what about, have you noticed that material costs, and I know steel's gone up, timber's gone up?
Material costs are worse again. Steel has gone up. The first was timber. Timber went up a huge amount this year already. So did steel, so did PVC, so did insulation has
what
gone.
What would your, would you have any advice around that? Do you think people should hold out if they're about to build? Do you think it's going to decrease? Do you think this is just a bubble that's going to burst, or what's your advice there?
I don't think anyone knows yet, because it's really only been running a few months. What I've read in places that timber might be beginning to level out a bit, but we don't know. I mean, could it last for 6 months? Could it last for a year? We've no way of knowing. I mean, the whole global supply chain has been so disrupted between Brexit and COVID. And then the Suez Canal issue, I know, is all fed into it as well. And you've had lockdowns and factories shut and then reopened and all. So, the whole thing is just chugging along. It'll eventually stabilise, sure, things always do. How long will it take? Very hard to know. You could take the view that if you were building your house, self-building, and you had access to the funds and you had access to a warehouse, you could buy all your material, well, buy a good chunk of your material, buy it now. If you're building in 2 months' time, it's unlikely to be fixed. In 2 months' time, you might buy your insulation, or at least order it now, because it could take a month or 6 weeks to get it.
Yeah.
And even when you do get it, it might cost more. So,
yeah.
But it's really hard to know. I mean, I don't think anyone can conclusively say this is what's going to happen.
Yeah. I have heard of projects and bills pressing the pause button in the hope that, you know, say for example, some steel heavy bills or some bills that might have been a little bit more complicated. I've heard of stories of people pressing pause for a couple of months, hoping.
Well, my advice there, I prefer to be buying the material now and just hedging your bet rather than hoping that nothing else goes. I mean, sure, labour could go up in a few months as well. Things don't tend to get cheaper as time wears on. I think we all know that. Software is the only thing that gets cheaper. But building doesn't tend to get cheaper. It's a bit like staying out of the stock market. Most of the world's best investors don't recommend staying out of the stock market, you know. If I had a choice, I'd buy the material early and go, at least you can lock it down and hedge it. Would I be putting off a project for, I mean, you know, a lot of these projects are young couples. They either have a baby or a baby on the way, and they're at a stage in their life where they really need to change from kind of renting to building and all that. So time is of the essence, you know, if you're in your early 30s and you're just married and maybe you have life plans, maybe you have a child on the way. You don't really have time to be waiting then, you know. Yeah. So I'd be more buying it early and hoping you got it at a reasonable price. And the other thing is that you got it at a reasonable time, because insulation, you can order insulation today, it could take you a month to get it.
Yeah.
PVC windows used to take 6 weeks to get. Now they're 8, 10, 12 weeks to get. So all your timelines are running out, you know.
Yeah, the interesting thing about this conversation is, I suppose, that you are a builder. So, you know, a lot of people listening to this or watching this might not know whether they're suitable for a builder or that they might be able to manage the self-build route. You know, do you think that everybody's able for the self-built route? Would you advise engaging with a builder and go down that route? Or, you know, obviously, without getting too biased about it, but, you know, what would your advice be around, you know, those on the fence between self-building and building?
I think, I suppose there's a few things feeding into it. I mean, if you're really looking to save money, is it cheaper to do it yourself? In some respects, yes. Now, you're paying different VAT rates. Like, if you're getting a plumber in to do some plumbing work, he's charging you 13.5% VAT. If you're buying timber and you're going to get another carpenter with the timber up on the roof, you're buying that timber at 23%. Now, if you're getting it all through a builder, you're getting it all at 13.5% because he's supplying and fitting the whole building works. So he's charging everything at 13.5%. So you are paying a bit more VAT if you build it yourself because you are paying material at 23%. So yeah. That's one thing. It really comes down to how much time you can give it and how much headspace you have to give it. I mean, if you're working in an office or you're working in a multinational company, you can't leave your office from one end of the day to the next, you won't be able to be on site. And if you're not on site, you are the project manager, you are the builder, you are the person who's insuring the site. And what goes wrong? Like, the plumber knows how to do his job, and the plasterer knows how to do his job, and the electrician knows how to do his job. But where the plumber and the electrician are meeting to tie in on hooking up a heating system, you need to be in the middle of all that, making sure that's all being coordinated. Then you need to get it commissioned by a third party, which is the people who are supplying the heating system itself, air to water now, for example. There's a lot of interface there, and that's where you're needed. That's where a foreman's needed in a building company, or the builder if it's a smaller company. You're needed for all those interfaces. You're needed for all the junctions. So it really comes down to how much time you have to give that project. Now, if you are someone who's in the trade, I'd say that very few people in the trade who use builders, because they can do some of the work themselves, they have friends, yeah, and they can bring in and get good prices from them, and they have the time to give. They might be there every afternoon because they're doing something else in the morning, or, you know, if you're in the farming community and the houses you're building on your own land, so you'll be coming and going the whole time and again, so it works very well. But again, if you don't have the time to
give... I suppose it just depends on the lifestyle of the person living in the first place.
It depends on how much, yeah, like, do you think you're going to add value to it, yeah, by being there? I mean, if you haven't a clue about building and have little or no interest in it, you're not going to be adding much value. If you're fairly clued into that and you have a strong interest in it and you think you could drive good bargains and you can give it the time, then it could very well work for you. So you will save money by doing it yourself. But then, I suppose, depending on what your hourly rate is on your day job, I mean, if you're making big money on your day job and you're spending most of your time instead of billing out on your day job, working on your building site, maybe it doesn't work for you at all. So it comes down to the person, really, you know.
Yeah, people have misconceptions about builders. I think that in the building industry in general, there can be a bit of a grey area around builders. I don't know why it's builders in particular, because there's so many trades, but the builders in general seem to get a bad rep. I don't know if you've noticed that, but, you know, what would be a red flag to you in terms of, I've approached a couple of builders and they've got back to me with quotes, or maybe they haven't got back to me yet or whatever. Would there be anything that you would advise people that are going on the builder route?
Well, the first thing I'd say is, I think some of the builders deserve a poor reputation, right? Because like any other industry, there are some builders that aren't great builders, and there's some builders that don't answer the phone, all that kind of thing. So look, if some builders probably don't deserve a good reputation, and many do, right? I think if you can't get a builder on the phone, he's either too busy or he just doesn't answer his phone the best of times, and you just got to. I always picture myself, like, we'd be appointing subcontractors. If I can't get a subcontractor on the phone, I won't use him, because the day when there's a problem is the day you need to get him on the phone. I mean, when things are going fine, you'll always get him on the phone. It's the day there's a problem. And that's the same as someone self-building, trying to get the builder on the phone. Can't, you know, that's always a concern. I suppose if you're going out for three or four prices and one seems really low, he's forgotten something, like, you know, because everyone's buying concrete in the same place. Everyone's buying their timber in one or two building yards. Everyone's using the same window company. They might even be using the same plumber. Who knows, right? So, and most construction rates and prices are commodities at this stage, right? There's a rate for plastering that nearly everyone knew, you know. So if someone's very low, they've either made a mistake or they're really quiet and fighting for work, and you'd wonder why. So if you're taking the lowest price...
Yeah, because not necessarily the lowest price, maybe not actually the better price when you look at quality or whatever it is.
It never is.
Yeah.
right? In like,
if I think that's a no-brainer, though.
If we're going out to tender for three prices for a plastering, and we got one really low price, we know we're going to be dealing with difficulty on site. Like, and you never make the money that you thought you saved. I mean, by the time you've a fix, you've paid out double that. So, as well, the other thing I would say about self-building is, like, I have worked as an engineer. I'm an engineer as well, but I've worked, doing structural surveys or snag lists and whatever. I would know going in the gate of a house whether someone built it self-built or used a good builder. You'd know every corner you look, there'd be a little mistake here. That doesn't quite line up with that. There's an issue over there. That pipe shouldn't be. You'll see it everywhere. I'd know straight away. I go, I bet this was self-built. You will know that, right? Now, I'm not necessarily promoting this because I'm a builder, but I would know, right? And if someone asked me to do a structural survey because they're about to buy this house that someone built, I would say, you do know that was built direct labour. How do you know? But you look, there are all the little things. I could point them all out, right? And I say, look, so there are all the things I can see. There's probably loads of things I can't see as well behind the scenes. And look, I'm just throwing it out there, you know? So these are things.
Does that generally affect the price of housing?
Well, if someone asks you to do a structural survey, it depends on the house, right? If someone was said, it's a bit like a car. If you're buying a second-hand car and you see one car that looks in mint condition, and you see another one, you go, oh, there's a scratch there, and that wheel looks like it wasn't maintained properly. You pop the engine, and the oil hasn't been changed. You kind of go, you would think twice about buying that car. Or you might go, well, look, it's a lot of money. Are you happy to pay? So, of course, it does, you know.
I never heard of that before, that direct labour built houses could negatively affect the price of the sale.
For a savvy buyer or a savvy engineer, wow. Yeah, you know, because sure, of course it does. I mean, if one car is built better than the other or maintained better, one will be, and they're identical cars, one will be worth that a little bit more. I mean, which one would you prefer yourself? You know?
Yeah, of course. Sorry, you were going to say there something about self-building, were you?
No, that's my comment, really, yeah.
Yeah. So then when couples are going with a builder and they get their quotes in and they've got three or four quotes, what should they be looking out for in terms of comparison? I know we mentioned about the price and stuff, but is there anything there?
Yeah, well, before I even answer that, like, the first, like, you, depends on what kind of, how you get a price from a builder. I mean, are you getting a big, long bill of quantities from a builder? Now, bill of quantities is a 40, 50, 60 page document, right? A detailed Excel spreadsheet with quantities and rates and then lump sums, and then it's all added up at the end. Now, like, in construction, tendering is, there's no perfect way to end up with a builder. You're either getting the cheapest builder or the best builder, and you know what I mean? It's very hard to get a builder that's good value, so he's not the cheapest, and he's one of the best, and he's available in 3 weeks. It's very hard to get all that right. And if you do, you've done very well. There's a big exercise to get all that right. Like, first of all, anyway, you're looking at the, before you even go to tender, right, you want to make sure you're going out to tender to builders that are good.
Okay.
That are known to friends or family or colleagues or whatever in the area. They've used these builders before and that they're reputable. That they are in business long enough that they can carry the cash flow of the job, you know, because if they're waiting for a payment, that, you know, the builder could be, you could be carrying 30 or 40,000 euros in a job waiting for a payment, and you still need to pay your subcontractors to keep the job going while your bank is paying the builder. So he needs to be financially stable enough, so he needs to be in business long enough to have built up that cash flow cushion,
yeah,
you know, working capital. You need to know that the builder is reliable and that his, if it's a problem down the road, 3 years down the road, he'll come back and fix it. You need to know that the builder is reputable in that, you know, when he's giving you quotations of bits and pieces, that he's, you know, he's honourable and everything else.
Yeah. And would you advise people to go around and talk to other people that have just built houses?
Definitely, yeah. Yeah. Okay, there's things now, like people are getting Google stars and all that. That's very important, I suppose, that people are almost doing research more nowadays like that. But in the old days, before Google and all that, it was all about talking to friends and family who viewed different builders. And builders tend to work in a locality, you know what I mean? So it's well worth doing as much of that old school research as you can, and of course with the new Google star ratings and all that, it's well worth doing as well. So you would choose a few builders to go into your tender process. I think if you're choosing five, personally, I think that's too much.
Okay,
like,
really, yeah.
I wouldn't get involved in a five builder tender. I kind of go, but sure, look, it gives the impression you're looking just for the lowest price, right? I think three or four is plenty, right? But so you then
so getting the too best, many quotes might put off a builder actually.
Yeah. Well, a builder then goes, oh, sure, I'm one of five. God, yeah, it's because the builder is going to have to get a QS to price the job, and that's going to cost him 500, 600, 700, 800 quid to do. And if he doesn't get the job, that's money lost. And it's a lot of money. I mean, you might go, but what's that to a builder? But I mean, if you in a shop, imagine what you could buy with 700 or 800 quid in a shop. You know, it is a lot of money, like. But then, like, to actually do a tender process properly is a very tricky endeavor. Like, I mean, what you should do, the best way to do it, is get your own QS to do up a bill of quantities, right, without rates, and send that bill of quantities to three or four builders. Then they will come back, and their QSs will rate those quantities in the bill of quantities, and then you get a bottom line at the end of all that, because then you have decided what you want them to price and what quantities and what way you want them to price. Because if you just hand them your planning drawings, like a lot of people do, that builder can go, well, there was no mention of they want a coloured render on that drawing, but it's mentioned in that drawing, so I'm just going to go for plain render because it says plain render on that drawing. So there was a mistake in the drawing, so I'm going to go for the lowest one because that's the cheapest one because that might get me the job.
Yeah.
Or they mentioned alu-clad windows on that drawing, but that says PVC, so I'm going to price. So the builder is motivated to price the cheaper aspects of it. Now, you might get another builder who goes, well, look, they said alu-clad to me, so I will price alu-clad because they seem like a kind of couple who'd like alu-clad. They pay a little bit more to get the nice stuff. So I'm going to price the alu-clad. Now, you might find that you went for the bottom line. Oh, great. I saved myself $3,000 with this builder. Fantastic. And you're ending up with the PVC windows.
And then the window day comes and you go, oh, wait a second.
Here we go, right? Whereas if you have your own bill of quantities with your own specifications and all that, and you hand that out and ideally get your own QS to check it at the end and do a report going, look, he's slightly cheaper, but he's only priced alu-clad. He's a little bit more, but not much, and he's an excellent builder. We've all checked his reputation, fantastic. It might be worth spending the extra money because it'll be money very well spent on site and everything. So you need to make a value call on it, you know? And I think, like, occasionally I get an email on a Monday morning going, here's dear sirs, they wouldn't even know your name. Here are our planning drawings. Grateful if you can return a quotation in 3 weeks' time. And you're going to spend 700 or 800 quid when no one hasn't even, they don't even know your name or, you know, and it's to whom may confirm and all that. Like, yeah. And you know that that's gone out to 7 or 8, maybe 10, who knows. Spend a bit of time making a personal connection.
And then
with
for the self-builders, would you still recommend them getting a QS on board early on?
Like, a good QS will save you money, right? And when you're dealing with hundreds of thousands of euros, a few thousand to a QS is very small money. I mean, if he's saving you a few percent, that's a huge saving. And you'll sleep better at night. Now, okay, if you're an accountant yourself and you're used to go, you know, you might be fairly handy at it, but they will save you money, like a good QS.
So even for the self-builders, you would still recommend a QS?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, I am a builder and I use a QS. Do you know what I mean? So, I mean, sure, I could do it all myself as well, but I mean, I don't. I mean, the QS will save you money, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah, because it's something that people, they might see that, because it's quite early on in the build, and might go, wait, he's charging me what? $2,000-$3,000? Nah.
Cutting, though, like, there's always corners to be cut to save money, and sure, we're all trying to save money, but geez, cutting out the QS, I don't know, it's the first thing I'd be cutting out. I mean, maybe do a bit of labouring yourself on a Saturday, or clean out the house yourself and, you know, load the skip yourself on a Saturday if you want and save a few bob there. Geez, the QS himself can save you money. Why, you know what I mean?
So just
be careful about where you're what you're looking to cut, because it could be the one thing that saves you money.
Yeah. And then I suppose going on to, okay, so we've decided to build a house, and we're looking at sites, or we're choosing a site. Would you have any advice for people choosing sites to build on? You know, a lot of people choose their family sites. Would you have any thoughts on that?
Well, if you choose, like, the cheapest site to build on is a flat site by the road, right? Now, it mightn't be the nicest site, it mightn't have the best views, but a flat site with no rock or clay, or there's no boggy area out near the road, is the cheapest site to build on. Now, if you have a sloped site, it costs a little bit more because you might have cut and fill. If it's very sloped, you might have retaining walls, which are very expensive. if there's rock in the site and you have to go in with a rock breaker at the end of your digger and take out all the rock before you can put on your foundations, that's thousands and thousands of euros, depending on the rock and quantity of rock and everything else.
And if people are looking at sites, how would they look at that, or how?
Talk to the farmer.
Okay. Yeah.
The farmer will know what's in the ground. So if you're buying it from a farmer, your dad's the farmer. Dad, look, what's the ground like here? I mean, we build on farmers' sons and daughters' sites the whole time, and the father would come out to meet me and everything else, and I'd say, what's the ground like? And he'll tell you. I mean, and the other thing is, when you're doing the percolation test, go out when the digger's there digging the trial holes for the percolation test, you're going to have to pay for it anyhow. Go out and meet the digger driver and go, what's the ground like? He'll tell you, right? He'll go over and just, look, I'll drive over and I'll do a few more trial holes around the place and watch him, you know? He'll tell you, yeah, the ground's good, that's good building ground. This is really important stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And if there was rock, say a couple are like, oh shit, we're after having rock on our side, Kieran has given us a flag. It's not, you're not necessarily saying don't build there, you're just saying be aware that there's going to be an extra cost.
There could be. If it pulls out with the bucket, which sometimes rock does, got a light shale, and the ground workers probably won't charge you extra. But if it's a rock breaking exercise, that actually depreciates the value of the digger, because the actual vibration, the pneumatic vibration on the rams, all the hydraulic rams deteriorate, so it actually shortens the life of a digger. Hence why they charge extra for it. So if there's rock, it will cost you a little bit more. But I mean, look, that might be the section of the site that gives you the beautiful view over the valley. So look, it might be money well spent, and it's just worth considering. Anything with a slope, anything with rock, any kind of boggy area, you might have to put in a raft foundation, you might have to pile it. All these things cost a lot of money. Anything in the ground is expensive, you know.
Yeah. And then moving on from getting your site to the enviable word of planning permission, what are you noticing with planners at the moment? And have you noticed a shift in the last couple of years? I know that there's a lot of talk about building out in the country now and housing in general with regards to planning. What's your experience been? Because obviously you're dealing with them in day and day out.
Planners' expectations. Planning is becoming a little bit more onerous. Like, the planners are really, really busy. They're probably understaffed. A lot of projects are going to further information because planners are struggling to keep up with the pace of projects are coming at them. Further information probably gives them a little bit more time to assess the project. So I'm seeing projects, you know, maybe 50% of projects go to further information, which delays it then by a few months. First of all, if you're building in Cork, there's a great document online, the Rural Development Guidelines, published by Cork County Council.
I think every county council has one of them.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I've seen them on for Roscommon where I'm.
Yeah. They're great documents, and they have it. They have all the details of what they expect in terms of good housing design and good site design, site choice, and all that kind of thing. Read them, because I mean, and generally they're promoting good design anyway, so you'll learn from it. I would definitely use an architect, right? Because I'd be able to go, I can save money by just using an engineer, and he can do the percolation test and all that. That's money I wouldn't be saving, because if you have any kind of a half reasonable budget, an architect will design a better house than an engineer, right? So get the architect to design it, so you'll get the space right, because you only get one chance to do that. Architects are generally good at planning permissions too, because and planners like to see architects involved, because they know that they'll generally speaking have put a bit of thought into design and the orientation and the planning policy and all that. So if you can afford to, I would certainly use an architect, because you'll get a better design and hopefully you get an easier path through the planning process. You know?
Yeah, I think the architect versus engineer thing is nearly not as straightforward, but it's nearly like the QS thing, in the sense that, you know, you only do it once and there's only X amount of time. You know what I mean? The architect may not save you money, but he may definitely increase the value or even the quality of it.
Increasing the value is one thing, but I mean, if you're building your forever home, it's unlikely you'd ever be selling it, please God. You want to be living in a great space, you know? You want all your spatial layout to be right. You want this, you know, light flow and properly appointed space and everything else. So there's only one chance to do that. So look, we're all looking at projects, and the main thing with projects in general is, like, it isn't so much about low cost, it's about driving value. So whereas you might spend the extra few bob in using an architect, a good architect, please God, and then you've spent a bit extra, but that's a value to, because you only get one chance to design the house. you might want to save yourself some money by doing some of the labouring yourself. Yeah. So you're saving there. But I mean, you're driving value on both. There's no point cutting it and find out just the house wasn't great at the end of all that. You know, you want to make sure you get what you're... You only get one chance to do it, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, self-builders can... not to be too harsh, but they can become obsessed with cutting costs to the point that it becomes detrimental to the quality of the house, you know.
And you'll never forget that, like, you know. You'll never forget that. I remember when we renovated a house years ago, we got a kitchen for probably a bit cheaper than we should have. And I never heard the end of it. I still, you close the doors of that kitchen and just the noise is horrendous. So I know the value, and it wouldn't have cost much more to get a better one. But this is back in the early days. But like there's nothing like spending a little bit more and get a lot more, you know. Because look, you really want to be doing it once.
Just going on to that, it's the early days. Like, this is not one of the questions, I just thought of it. Do you notice a big difference between building in the middle of a Celtic Tiger and building now?
Oh, yeah.
Why?
Number one, it was the prices were horrendously high during the Celtic Tiger and quality was horrendously low. So it was an all-time horrendous time to be building. It was the worst time ever. Because it was all credit-fueled the monies. So you weren't getting, there was no value to be had. Like, you were paying too much for the land, you were paying too much for the contractors, and you were getting horrendously bad quality. So it was just, I mean, there's nothing good in all that. And then it all went the opposite then, of course, after it. You were getting the best of guys, because the bottom of the market, the poor tradesmen just left the market and emigrated or worked elsewhere or whatever. So if, beyond that, then you were getting the best of people for really, what's the work at cost or whatever. So you were getting the best of it then. And since then, it has moved on a little bit, not into boom times now by any means, but since then it has moved on a little bit. And you're, generally speaking, the quality is quite good now, generally speaking. There's still reasonable value to be had. I mean, there isn't massive inflation in building, in labour costs. More so material lately. Because of cost inflation, whatever, you know. So it was, I remember, it was...
I'm sure you probably had some crazy stories from...
plenty of them, yeah. But it wasn't, we didn't cut any corners. And we didn't, you know, we weren't hiking up price and whatever, which is why we got through the recession.
So we
started in 2004 and here we are in 2021 still going strong and growing and everything else. So, but we took a kind of a long-term view, but there was an awful lot of short-term operators there who've come and gone, and maybe some of them are going back again now, you know?
What common mistakes do people make when they are building a house themselves? So say they're self-building. What's some common mistakes that you might see? You might, you know, see people going to go, oh, he shouldn't have done that, or he shouldn't have done that.
I suppose from a design point of view, like the latest trend is often, you know, there to be seen. No, that's just a personal view, but I think you can't go too far wrong with a timeless approach, because you might have the latest colour of windows or the latest type of cladding or whatever, but in 5 years' time you're going to, and I've been there myself, you know, you're going to look back and go, God, yeah, I suppose we should have stepped back a little bit, because it was all in vogue then and no one could have tired of looking at it. But so just step back and realise this is something you're going to be living in for maybe 50 years, you know, hopefully.
That's actually really good advice.
So step back a little bit from the trends. I know your friends and family and all, you know, and it's going to be on TV shows and everything else, but step back a bit from that, because like this is a long-term view and some of these things you can't change. Just a certain colour window, if it's factory finished, you can't really change it. So step back a bit from that and try and go for a little bit more timeless, because these trends do come and go every few years, you know. That would be one of the biggest ones. And I see money being spent in the wrong places too. Like, you can see people and they're spending fortunes on chandeliers and these front pillars and all that. And then you're going, yeah, but the living space is a bit small and there isn't enough connection to the garden. And you're going, you know, it'd have been better spent getting the space right.
Yeah.
And then whatever you've left, you know, put on the frills afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and have your house invest from the inside out.
Yes.
That would be the design from the inside out and invest from the inside out. Like the center of your house is your kitchen, right? So the most money should be spent on things like your heating system, your kitchen, your utility, getting your living space the right size so you never, in fact, slightly bigger than you think you need and just be done with it. And make utility twice the size you think you need. Because if you are, if you haven't had children yet, and you're just, you know, just engaged and you're building your first home, you think, ah, but sure, look, utility room, we don't really need it. You have two or three young children and clothes, horse and all that, and that's a major, major mistake. So if you haven't children yet, build utility twice the size you think you need it. And you'll probably be just about the right size then. Because you can't build, no one has ever regretted having a utility room that's too big, ever. It's not something you hear. So that's the first thing I'd say. Design your house from the inside out, right? The curb appeal doesn't really matter, right? It matters to the neighbors and people driving up the driveway, but you're going to be living the inside of the house. So design a house from the inside out. Get all the utility, the living space. Cut down on circulation space if you can. You know, the big hall with the winding stairs and the chandelier, not all that important at the end of the day.
Sorry, what do you mean by circulation space? What is that?
So your hall, okay, your landing, they're all like, it's just circulation space. So it's from moving from your living room to your bathroom, the hallway is a circulation space. Cut down a little bit on that if you can, unless you have a huge budget, and make your rooms that little bit bigger. Design around light and flow. So the sun rises in the east and sets in the west and spends most of the day in the south. So ideally, people like to have the east for their kitchen. So when they wake up in the morning, the sun's greeting them in the kitchen. They like to have the west for the living area, patio doors and their patio and all that. So when you're setting sun over your barbecue area and all that sort of things. And then, you know, your dining area and all that facing south so that so you have lovely afternoon and light throughout your living space. So design from the inside out. Some people kind of, you know, design, oh, the house is going to be facing the road. So that's the front of the house. But I mean, if the front of the house is south, then why put your front door on the front of the, you know, you can put your front door on the side of the house, or, you know. So design around, design from the inside out, and ideally your living space is facing south, even if that is to the front, or even if that is to the road. So design around light, and then bring your driveway around to the opposite side and call that the front of your house, not necessarily the road. And invest from the inside out. Get all the inside of the house working, and then go, well, look, have we enough money for tarmac? And have we enough money for the porch with the pilasters and all that kind of thing? And then you can make that call.
But even still, like, you know, they can come 2, 3, 4, 5 years after.
Well, there you go.
They don't need to be.
There you go.
They're not going to affect your night's sleep, like, you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, get the inside right and invest in things like a good heating system and good tradesmen, like, because, like, you'll spot the good and bad tradesmen a few years later when problems start arriving. You go, you know, then you're wondering how you're going to fix all that. So so a little bit of extra money well spent goes an awful long way in a building project, you know?
And what areas would you say that you can cut costs in a self-build? Like, I know there is certain, like, you know, labour that just can be done, you know, just general labour that can be done in self-build.
Yeah, I mean, look, okay, if you're that way minded, I mean, like, when I started off building, the first cost I was cutting out was labour. I mean, I swept up all our sites myself, and then after a while I didn't have time, so I had to get labour in. You know, you can paint the house yourself. A lot of people do that. Now, it takes a lot of time, and it's all down to the preparation, so you need to have a good eye for detail when it comes to building preparation. But, like, you could paint the house yourself, but that comes down to, again, what time you have. There aren't many trades. I mean, and you could certainly be labouring, cleaning up the house yourself, or maybe falling in with, you know, the if you've just tidying up the site and everything else. But I mean, nowadays you see building has become very specialised, so there's a very limited. I mean, you know, scaffolding now is all certified. Nearly all the trade, like, there's different levels of insurance for all the trades. So there isn't much of the actual construction work itself you can do yourself,
yes,
unless you're kind of handy or, you know, maybe you can do a little bits and pieces of carpentry yourself or tiling yourself. Some people do that. But I mean, I think unless you're gifted or very experienced, the end product will probably suffer.
That's definitely something that people may overlook at the time to save the €1,000 or something. But then when you're looking at this thing,
€1,000 over €350,000 or €300,000 or €250,000, it's not that much really when you think about it, you know. So there are savings. Like, it was shopping around for, you know, for bathroomware, shopping around for kitchens and all that. Like, that time is well spent, spent, you know, doors and all that. That's where you'll save rather than actually doing physical work. Because, and I think if you can, buying tiles in January is another good thing. January is a great time to buy tiles in bathroom, where you often get January sales for that.
I never knew that.
It's generally speaking a great time to be buying tiles and bathroomware. And shopping around. So you can save thousands, you know, between your tiling and your bathroomware and all that. I mean, there's thousands and thousands in that. So if you're saving a few hundred here and a few hundred there, I mean, that's time very well spent. You know?
Yeah. So I just wanted to touch on build methods. And there's there's so much talk now about ICF, timber frame and block building. What would your thoughts be around the different types of build methods, and what would you commonly be using yourselves as builders?
I have found block work is still a little bit more cost effective than timber frame or ICF. I suppose if you're doing a self build, there's a bit of work in managing a block build project, because you need to get the blocks delivered on site. You need to have mortar on site. You might need to have water and sand and cement on site. It's very weather dependent. You can't lay blocks in the rain and everything else. And then dealing with block layers and scaffolding adjustments, there's a lot involved in all that operation. So from a self build point of view, timber frame is more straightforward, because the timber frame company will do all their frame installation themselves, and they'll have it up quite quickly. Block laying takes a good bit longer than timber frame, so it takes longer, it's more complex, and it's more weather dependent, and there's a lot more moving parts. You've got to buy all the blocks and the sand cement and the ties and the insulation and the sills and the heads and DPCs. There's an awful lot involved. Whereas timber frame, again, most of that comes as part of the pack. But you're paying a bit more for that.
What about ICF? What's your thoughts there?
ICF then...
That's insulated concrete formwork.
Yeah. The ICF is another... there are, I suppose, just to go back to my earlier conversation, block laying costs a little bit less, but takes a bit longer, is more weather dependent and more complex, right? Timber frame takes less time, costs a little bit more, but you have your house dried in kind of 2 weeks time, in 2 weeks, right? So there's a huge benefit there, and it's much more user friendly. ICF costs a little bit more, and can be very good on a site that's difficult to access, because there are some sites you can't get up with a timber frame the setup, because you need to have a crane. You can't get a crane up there, and you mightn't be able to get a block rab up there, so you can't get blocks up there. ICF is ideal because you can, you know, the actual ICF units are made from insulation, so they're very light. It's better done by specialists, by the way, because the propping is quite complex, the steel tying is quite complex, but it's ideal for a site that's where the access is tricky, maybe up a steep slope or what have you, and then you can concrete pump it. The benefits of ICF are great for a tricky site. You get very good inherent airtightness, it can be very good from that point of view. So good for high energy rating houses and everything else. Although strictly speaking, any one of those products, once designed correctly, will meet the same criteria. The downside is if you've ICF in place, it's tricky. If you ever decide you want to change a window later on, or add a door or something to your house, if you're remodeling it, you're cutting through reinforced concrete, so there's a lot more involved there. With ICF and with timber frame, unless you're using a block outer leaf, you're probably using an acrylic render on the outside, which looks lovely but costs more than a sand cement render. So there's all that. So there's pros and cons to all of them, really, you know.
And what would your go-to method be in terms of building?
If I can use it, I tend to use block work. It's just, you can drive more value, you know, because, you know, when you're designing a house and you're costing it to align with someone's budget, you're always putting the shoulder to the wheel, because there's never budget left over, you know. You're always trying to kind of make things work. So generally, I would default to block work with sand cement on the outside and painted and a pumped cavity. That's generally a fairly cost-effective solution, you know.
People talk a lot about airtightness and the importance of that. How early on in a build, as a builder, would you be thinking about airtightness, and how early on in a build as a self-builder should you be considering airtightness?
Well, I suppose I'm working more, I'm working beyond building, I'm working in design as well. So I suppose it comes down to a budget. If a budget is at a very high level, I'd be going into maybe a full heat recovery package, right? And if at a heat recovery package, your airtightness is going to be very onerous. I mean, it could be as low as, could be below 2 air changes an hour. So that's a very onerous package. So you're into air tightness membranes, and you're into air tightness. You've air tightness detail around your windows. You need to have an air tightness wall set up on the external leaf, and you might have air tightness membranes on all your ceilings and all that, and all your surfaces going through any cavities or through any airtight walls and the external envelope. So it depends on the budget, because the more air tightness products cost more money. Depends on your BER target value as well, and it depends on the ventilation system you're going to use, because a demand controlled ventilation system will work at a slightly higher air tightness, so maybe 3 and beyond, whereas a heat recovery is probably 2 and lower ideally. I mean, there you can vary that a little bit, but I mean that's ideally how you set it up. So I would tee all these things up quite early. In the first few weeks of a project in design on site, I'd be giving the builder that spec day one on site and saying that's where we're, because he'll have to talk to the masons about that to make sure the block line is, better than everyone knows this at the start and say, look, we are going to be building a very airtight house. Just put everyone on guard and, start as you mean to continue, because even pouring the concrete, it's all part of it.
Those little layer gaps then can become problematic if you go do your tests and stuff, for sure. I think it's only us, Kieran. I think we've covered loads there, to be honest with you. The last thing, or the thing I always want to ask, is you're at the dinner table, somebody comes, Kieran, I'm about to build a house, and let's just assume that they're a self-builder. What's your number one tip? Or what's the one thing you'd say to them? Listen, whatever you do,
as they say in construction, measure twice, cut once. Do your research. Don't rush into it. Like, speak to people who've done it. A lot of people who've done it say they wouldn't do it again as well, from a direct labour perspective, right? Because they find the whole thing so stressful. So do your research, and cutting costs is important, but like when you start looking at cost per square foot, don't just remember the cheapest one you heard, because people typically do, right? I'd be more for, if you have the budget, I'd be more for driving value than cutting cost, because at the end of the day, you're going to be living this, and your family's going to be living this house, but do your research, and do your research before you make any decisions. So research what an architect does, what an engineer does, what a QS does, what a builder does, and various different trades, and build up a good knowledge base, talk to friends and family, Google, and do the research before you jump straight into it. People jump into it, they realize they've made loads of mistakes, and God, if I buy time back, I'd have done things differently. Before you rush into it, spend a few months researching it, because that'll pay dividends. It's great to be researching online, but there's no substitute for talking to friends and family, work colleagues who've built, and learn from their mistakes, because that's all there to be done. So measure twice, cut once.
That's great. Kieran, thank you so much.
Delighted.
I really appreciate your time, and it's great to have somebody with such a vast knowledge of the building industry, to have their approach on not only self-building but approaching a builder. So thank you very much. Where can people find you? What's the best place to get in touch with you, or what's the best way?
Yeah, so we offer, it's design and build, so we offer the full suite of services, literally the one-stop shop, from design, planning permission, build, all the finishes, all fixed price and all that. So it's KMC Homes, kmchomes.ie, and we're on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter.
You told me before the podcast that you're going to be getting more into YouTube.
I've done a lot of YouTube work in the past, and I'm going to be doing a bit more again now lately. YouTube and Instagram and Facebook are probably our major channels. So stay tuned to those anyway.
Yeah. Kieran, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Delighted. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the podcast, our first of the professional series. If you want to find out more from Kieran, you can find him online at kmchomes.ie.
And as I mentioned at the start of the podcast, I've just set up Get In Our Home with the aim of helping people that are on their own home building journey. As we're only new, I would really, really appreciate it if you could take like literally 1 minute of your time and leave us a review on your podcast platform. And if you click subscribe, you'll receive a notification when we release our next episode. It'll cost you absolutely nothing and really help us to keep going with the content. Thanks, and hope to see you all soon.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.